This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, we'll get to some Denton news in a moment. I do want to mention that Window Nation's got an incredible deal going on right now. How about four free windows, he said, for every four you buy. One of their customers, Albert, said, great value, great product, great customer service, highly recommended. Replace your cold, drafty windows with energy-efficient ones from Window Nation. Built to protect your home with top-quality insulation and seals, Window Nation has some of the best insulated windows you can buy. Their windows frequently outperform and outlast the ones from the expensive guys. Save money every month on heating and cooling all year long. Four windows free with every four purchased, 0% interest, zero payments for 2 years, and no money required as a down payment. You won't pay anything until the year 2027. Plus, if you buy a house full of windows, you'll get a free entry door. Here's why I trust Window Nation. A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. 50-point inspection of every window before it leaves the factory. 20-point inspection for every window when it's installed. Installers who specialize in windows, many of them have over 15 years of experience. Your new windows can be installed in a day or less. They've got a 96% customer satisfaction rating and over 20,000 five-star reviews. Plus, Window Nation's windows come with a lifetime warranty. They were recently ranked highest on the Forbes list of best window installation companies. You can trust Window Nation for high quality, affordable windows. Hurry, this sale ends soon. Don't overpay for expensive windows that may not be as good. Schedule a fast, free estimate right now with the pros at Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. All right, let's get to some Denton news. All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, you're not going to find this funny. I found it funny. And before you ask, no, this is not an April Fool's joke. Because Jimmy's Famous Seafood literally tweeted, not an April Fool's joke, but they are now offering a crispy local snakehead nugget served with terrapin dipping sauce. And in their tweet, they said, in honor of Kevin Willard leaving, they present snakehead bites. So you can get snakehead bites at Jimmy's Famous Seafood for $16.17.
Yeah, I'm just not participating in the viciousness of this. Has nothing to do with, what I think about this situation. As I've said repeatedly, with great emphasis, he did not handle this situation well at all. And it was short-term damaging. And at the same time, I know, and a lot of people that have been in the know for a while understand that this is a look in the mirror moment, that this is the second coach that has decided, not good enough for me. It's got to be better. It's got to be more, you know, top-notch, first-class, upper tier. And I do think that the changes will be made off the heels of this. But I've seen the vicious, mean-spirited, borderline threatening behavior. I'm just not into that. You know, that's just me. I'm disappointed, very disappointed. Last week's Thursday night Sweet 16 game was tarnished for me, even though once they tipped it up, I was all about the players and all about them winning the game and getting to the Elite Eight. There was a lot that was a shame about last week and leading up to it. But now I'm focused as a fan on them getting the solutions right, fixing what's been broke internally, finding an excellent coach and getting it turned back around and into what we've wanted it to be so that the next coach doesn't feel like there's a much better place than Maryland, which the last two have felt like Maryland wasn't good enough. And before you start tweeting me, well, Mark Turgeon didn't get a job. Well, he didn't want a job. He had opportunities for jobs, and he's become a very sought-after consultant in the coaching industry since his retirement. They just loved the area too much and wanted to stay. I find a lot of what's social media. Look, you just got to ignore it anyway. These people, many of them, have never solved a problem in their life, and it's and most of the people, I wouldn't say most of them, but a large percentage of the people that are vicious towards human beings on social media, these are the same people that were calling for Kevin Willard's head in January and would have called for his head had he lost to Colorado State. It does not change the way he left and how really it was dishonorable in many ways. Multiple things here are true simultaneously, but that's in fun. I get it. I understand it. I'm not ripping that. I am ripping some of the incredibly mean-spirited ugliness from some of the same people that were starting threads in January to take Kevin and fire him because he was 1-3 in the Big Ten. And by the way, some of those people, you know, never post for some of the games that may have helped them along the way anyway. So I put myself into that category, by the way. I didn't go to anywhere near as many games. You know, I have the same, you know, poor, lame excuses for not going to as many games as I used to go to, you know, weather, traffic, start times, you know, the opponent isn't as sexy as it was back in the ACC days. All of that, you know, I'm a part of too, but not the viciousness and not the mean-spiritedness. I understand what happened here. I understand what, and a lot of the people out there don't know, and that's fine. They shouldn't know about what it's been like. But I know the challenges for basketball at Maryland. I don't have any problem with him wanting to leave. I have a major problem with the way he handled leaving. And that's where I'll leave it. I mean, disappointed, beyond disappointed, about taking a lot of the tarnish off what was the first time in 9 years that we had a week like last week. It definitely, you know, impacted the way I consumed the Thursday night Sweet 16 game against Florida, knowing and or having a very strong feeling that he was essentially 1 foot out the door. And, you know, if I end up talking to him at some point down the road, I would tell him the way to do it if you knew you were leaving. And I know that he got most of what he wanted, but there were still some questions. Just so everybody knows, there wasn't an AD in place. There was also probably some people left over in the athletic department that he would have preferred to have seen go. But I don't think that would have changed his mind. He was going to Villanova. And yet he laid out that there was a real good chance that he wouldn't go to Villanova and he'd stay at Maryland if he got basically the things that he was looking for. And he did, for the most part. And I would tell him, look, there's no easy way to leave. They were going to be vicious to you regardless of whether or not you had talked, but that should have been a week if he knew he was going where it was, look, I'm focused on, you know, Grand Canyon. I am really focused on a very good Colorado State team. I've had these players together with me all year long. We've been on a journey. We are going to try to take this as far as it can go, and I am totally dialed in and focused on these things, not anything else. You know, that stuff comes when the season is over. I'm in the midst of the battle right now, and that's what I am focused on. Now, people would have killed him for that, too. Killed him for that. But at least he wouldn't have said what he said along the way, which is, no, I want to be at Maryland if I can get these things, which he apparently pretty much got for the most part. There's no doubt it looks very much like it was preordained. It was done, and he has every right, and as I've said over and over again, he's got every right to have made that decision. And there's a lot of people within the know that understand why it isn't the best and hasn't been the best situation. But hopefully that'll change. So I'm into now looking ahead. Hopefully, you know, we got a different situation for the next coach, a much better situation for the next coach. You know, I love Maryland football. I think Mike Locksley has done a decent job, you know, but as well as he could be doing. But basketball is what matters the most for, you know, the majority of the people. And they got to, you know, dial in on that sport in which they can win a national championship. Scott was talking and said that he had a coach tell him about the opening, and he said, look, that is still considered in the industry a Monday night job, meaning you can play on the final Monday night of the season at Maryland. There are a lot of places you really can't. Maryland is still, within the coaching industry, considered to be a Monday night job. A job in which you can be playing and you can win a national championship. So let's give the next coach all of the resources he needs to go get that done. All right, what's next on your news?
Worth pointing out, all proceeds donated to Turtle NIL from Jimmy Seafoods.
That's good. Okay, so that to me is productive. That's a, you know what? That's part of the solution here.
It's part of the solution. Yeah. Nats in action last night. They fell to the Blue Jays 5-2. You got back-to-back homers from James Wood and C.J. Abrams. Unfortunately, though, Dylan Cruz is hitless in 2025. Yeah. So game two of the series tonight.
I mean, 0 for what now? 14, something like that?
He is like 0 for 14. I'm gonna
bet. How'd Soroka pitch?
I think he exited earlier than anticipated last night.
Five innings, four earned runs, walked one, struck out three. So that, not of the four starts, we had three really good starts to open up the season, and last night he went five innings but gave up four earned runs. So that's not great.
Not great.
And five hits.
And they're back at it today against the Blue Jays for game number
five. Is Dylan Cruz literally 0 for 14?
No, 0 for 15. 0 for 15. He literally doesn't have a hit. Yeah. I bet he hits a home run soon. I'm going to bet that he hits a home run soon. Wizards lost to the Heat last night, 120-94, but Jordan Poole had 35. Right. Caps in action tonight.
Hold on for one sec. So what I've been doing is I have been watching occasionally, because I really want to have an opinion on Alex Saar. Like, could he be a true star moving forward? I mean, he's about to turn 20 years old this month. He has had some games recently. The number two pick in the draft, keep in mind, from last year. He's had some games. I mean, he had the 34-point game in the win over Denver, where he was, you know, 12 of 28 and 5 of 9 behind the arc. He's, you know, had some really good block shot games, really good rebounding games, had a couple of double-doubles. I mean, he has looked the part, like a guy that when he physically matures, he's going to be a problem to deal with. Last night was not his best. He was 3 for 17, 1 for 7 from behind the arc, and finished with just 8 points and 3 rebounds. By the way, they have been hammered a couple of times here recently. The Indiana game, we talked about that on Monday, right? Or on Friday.
Yeah,
we talked about that on Friday's show when Indiana took 3 intentional shot clock violations as if they were playing a CYO, you know, game with a mercy rule. That was crazy. But, yeah. Okay. What else? One other quick thing.
Yeah.
I got this tweet from somebody, and I'm not going to be able to find it right now because it was from a couple of days ago. But he basically said, you know, for those people that are saying that, you know, just finish in the bottom 3, you have the same chance of getting the number 1 pick. That's not why you want to finish, you know, anywhere in the bottom 3. You want to finish with the worst record because, and his point's a good one, and I think I knew this, but you, once you determine, you know, the draft is for the top 4 picks, not just the top 3, the draft lottery. And then it goes in the order in which your record, you know, worst record to best record the rest of the way. So you don't want to finish with the third worst record versus the second or the first worst record, because then your downside on where you pick is greater, you know, or lower in the draft, or you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So
right.
Once you do, if you don't finish in the top 4 with the draft lottery, then you could potentially, if you have the worst record, the worst you could finish with is the 5th pick. If the 4 teams that were picked in the draft lottery weren't any of the 4 worst teams. So you would be the next one. But if you were the third worst record, you could pick 7th. So you still want the Wizards to finish with overall the worst record in the league, which right now they don't have. They're a half game better than Utah. In the event that they don't get picked in the draft lottery in any of the top 4 spots, because they could end up picking 5, 6, or 7 after that based on their finish, even though they've got equal odds to finish with the number 1 pick with the other 2 of the 3 worst teams. Did I do a terrible job of explaining that?
Maybe not the greatest job that you've done. But
okay, can I simplify it?
It's the worse your record is, the likelihood that your pick is going to be better, even if you don't get the number 1 overall pick.
That's correct.
Right.
The 3 worst teams have equal chances, 14% chances of getting the number 1 overall pick. They also have better chances of getting the 2nd pick, 3rd pick, and 4th pick. But if they don't get any of those top 4 picks, then the rest of the draft, 5 through 30, goes on record. So if you had the 3rd worst record instead of the 1st worst record, it is possible that you could end up with as low as the 7th pick. Whereas if you have the worst pick, the worst you would pick in the draft is 5th overall. I think that was a better way.
That was a much better way. Just please don't send Cooper Flagg to Utah or Charlotte. He'd be much better here in D.C.
I really want Cooper Flagg so much.
I mean, he'd be so much better here in D.C. Speaking of the company that broadcasts the Wizards, Monumental announced today that they're going to broadcast the Washington Post All-Met Honors on Sunday, April 6th. I think this is fantastic. So you get to see some of your favorite high school athletes be honored for their performances this year. This is a really good job by Ted and everyone involved at Monumental. So applause to them.
I'm going to say that I think it's possible that many, many years ago, Channel 7 locally did some sort of, you know, all-Met show where they brought out the all-Met teams and interviewed players. I seem to have that somewhere in my memory bank.
I don't remember what channel it was, but you are right that somebody definitely did. I have a passion for high school sports, and I did when I was in high school, so I do remember watching certain programs similar to what you described. I don't recall what network it was on, though.
The reason I say Channel 7 is for many, many years, the city championship game, which no longer exists, it was the D.C. public school champion against the WCAC champion. You know, we would see DeMatha and Dunbar a lot, a lot of those years, or Spingarn and, you know, St. John's, or Mackin, or, you know, Gonzaga. DeMatha seemed to have been in it almost every year back then. But that game was played and it was televised. It was held at Cole Fieldhouse every year. And it was televised, I'm pretty sure, on Channel 7. Like, I bet you Tim Brandt may have called a lot of those games. All right, go ahead.
So the Cowboys and Jerry Jones are negotiating a deal with Michael Parsons on an extension that would make him the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. This comes from Clarence Hill Jr. However, Kevin, there is a twist. Jerry is negotiating directly with Michael Parsons, not his agent. He hasn't communicated with Michael Parsons' agent.
Who's his agent?
Since the combine, and Michael Parsons said he will not sign without his agent's approval.
What is Jerry doing?
I mean, just, he is completely inept.
I mean, Micah Parsons, whatever you do, do not sign anything without your agent. Do not even stay out of it. That's what you have an agent for. I don't know who Micah Parsons' agent is.
I'm trying to find that information. I'm not sure who his agent
but,
is.
But
either.
The yeah, that's look. I don't know the details other than what you just described. It's the first time I've heard this story. But God, that's just. That doesn't seem like great judgment by Jerry. Why are you trying to negotiate around an agent? Are you trying to get Micah Parsons more money to fire his agent so he doesn't have to pay his agent a commission? No. Don't do that.
He's trying to swindle him is what he's trying to do. He's trying to pull on the heartstrings in the personal relationship and swindle him. Thankfully, Mike, it seems like, at least according to the report, that he is not going to do anything without the approval of the agent. But I mean, I don't understand why Jerry Jones thought this was a smart idea.
Was Myles Garrett Steele the largest? That is currently the largest non-quarterback deal of all time, right?
It was.
Or is it Jamar Chase?
Yeah, it was for like 2 weeks, and then it's Jamar Chase. Michael Parsons' agent is David Mulgeta, who is the same guy that reps Deshaun Watson.
Yep. Okay.
Speaking of extensions, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are also working on extensions. I don't know how extensions work after your rookie contract, because it felt like we were just talking about Lamar Jackson extension 2 years ago, and then he's going to get re-upped. Josh Allen already got re-upped when he got paid around the same time. These contracts and how they work in the NFL are crazy once you get past the rookie deal.
But Lamar Jackson just signed his deal.
Just signed, and now they're gonna adjust the pay. Obviously, they're gonna make him much higher paid compared to some of these guys. I think like Jordan Love is getting paid more than Lamar Jackson.
Dak Prescott's being paid the most on an AAV basis, right? He's still number one from last year's deal.
Yes, it is still Dak Prescott.
It's 60, right?
Yeah, $60 million per year. Which okay.
Here, $60 million. All right, $60 million. Jordan Love's 55. Trevor Lawrence is 55 a year. Joe Burrow's 55 a year. Josh Allen's 55 a year. Tua's 53.1. Jared Goff's 53. Herbert's 52.5. Lamar's at 52. So that would put him at ninth in average annual.
And like Lamar,
he didn't have an agent, right?
I think his agent is his
mother
or his aunt. The idea of Lamar getting paid less than like Trevor Lawrence and Tua and Herbert and Goff is hilarious.
These things happen, though.
They do.
It's when you sign your deal. I mean, your deal is only a top five deal for a few months, typically. Maybe a year.
Maybe a year, but you're right.
This is why, I started saying years ago about Kirk Cousins, it was Field Yates' line. You know, today's overpayment is tomorrow's bargain. And it's just the way it works in the NFL, because the cap keeps going up, the money keeps increasing, and guys just keep making more and more money. So, you know, what are you going to do? Renegotiate and restructure and extend every year based on, what Josh Allen just got, or Trevor Lawrence or Jordan Love just got? Jordan Love got a hell of a deal, man.
He did get a
but
hell
you know
of
what?
A deal.
To Green Bay, you noticed it. You said, we got our guy. You got to lock him up.
You remember what Josh Allen said, though, a couple weeks ago, right? Once he got that deal.
That he didn't.
Somebody asked him, he was like, why didn't you go for the extra, it was like 5.5 or whatever, to get past Dak Prescott? And he was like, "What is that to me?" And I was like, that's a nice luxury to have, my friend. I wish I could turn down $5 million annually. I get it, though.
Yeah. All right, what else?
Your wife makes a lot of money, too, so good for him. As we mentioned, Dwayne Simpkins signed an extension with American through 2029 and 2030. Got them to the tournament this year for only the fourth time in program history, so congratulations to him.
Yep, congrats. I don't think this, you know, eliminates Dwayne at all as a candidate for the Maryland job.
Final thing here, the UConn women's team is back in the Final Four. I did watch this game last night. I was so bummed that there was no Juju Watkins to see a Juju versus Paige Elite Eight matchup, but it's their 15th Final Four of the last 16. That's insane.
I wanted, did you pull that piece of sound from Haley Van Lith that I asked you to pull?
Yes, I did.
Can we play that when we come back? Yeah. I want to play the Dan Quinn stuff. There's some Dan Quinn stuff that we have. Haley Van Lith, who has been a star in women's college basketball, major NIL money, right, that she has gotten the last few years.
Yeah.
And she played her final game. She played, actually, she went to TCU this year. They got, you know, led TCU to the Final Eight where they lost to Texas last night. But she had played at Louisville and then played at LSU last year with Angel Reese. She had an incredible post-game press conference, and I caught some of it and then saw a long 2.5 minute or so soundbite from her that I wanted to play because I thought it was incredibly honest and moving, actually. So we'll do that when we come back. You'll hear what Dan Quinn said earlier today at league meetings. Did you have any other news? Sorry to, you know.
No, that's all I got for you. No.
Okay. Dan Quinn did talk about Brandon Coleman's reassignment, if you will. We will get to that and more. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So last night in the Women's Elite Eight, Texas beat TCU 58-47. TCU was led all season long by Haley Van Lith. Haley Van Lith has been a great college basketball player. Louisville, then LSU last year, has made a ton of money in NIL. I didn't know this before last night because I just don't follow it closely enough, but she has certainly had some mental health issues during her career. Her coach at TCU, Mark Campbell, and Haley Van Lith, when this game ended, they were in an embrace for, I don't know, at least a minute or two. And she talked about him and her journey after the game. That was the end of it?
It was.
Yeah. So I watched this late last night, and I was like, well, first of all, there's so many aspects to it, and I'm not super familiar with, you know, women's college basketball over the last 2 years because of Caitlin Clark. Candidly, I did not know what she was going through, but there were just so many things in watching her speak. Number one is, you know, when you're a part of a team, and this goes in work environments too, when you are a part of a team, think about how many hours you spend with the people you work with, you know, 5 days a week, sometimes in some companies more than that, 8, 9, sometimes many more hours a day, more than you spend with your family. And you get to the end of something big, the end of a journey. And in college sports in particular, especially, there's more of a frequency of finality because there's a limited amount of time that you're allowed to play. And now, by the way, every year these teams change so much that was one aspect of it. You hear this all the time, like, and that's there's this journey of 30-something games, and yet the games that matter the most happen in March, but these people have been together, and then at the end of it, it's over abruptly, and lives are going to go in different directions, and they're never going to be a part of what they were just a part of with the same group of people. So I think that that's always kind of an interesting thing, and you know, a sad thing when it comes to an end, especially in sports where it happens kind of abruptly. Unless you're in that final game, then you know it's coming one way or the other. But to listen to her, and part of what wasn't we didn't have included in there is the words that she you know, used to describe her coach for this year. Mark Campbell is his name. He's the TCU women's coach. She said, "It's hard for me to put into words, but my relationship with my coach has been a joy for me. I'm sure I gave him a lot of headaches throughout the year, but he just accepted me for who I was. He took me at face value. He had a vision of who I thought I could be. And at the beginning, he probably was convincing me that I could be that person, but I wasn't necessarily in a place where I knew who I was anymore." And then you kind of picked it up from there where you heard her say, "He just breathed life into me, life perspective." And she talked about how, you know, there were nights where she didn't want to be alive and that she required medication to sleep or eat. And I guess she has spoken previously to having been suicidal at various points during her career. But, you know, incredibly poised and thoughtful and emotional in watching her kind of speak about the journey that she's been through. And I don't know, when you watch something like that, it's kind of easy to root for that person when she gets to that next level, which is, you know, like we used to be able to say it's a real job because you're getting paid, but you're getting paid in some cases much more in college than you will get paid in the WNBA. But you know, seemed to me, and I don't know much about her. I've certainly heard her name before. I'm sure I've seen her play because she played on that LSU team last year with Angel Reese that played Iowa in the Elite Eight, I think, Denton. But seems to me from afar like an easy person to root for.
She's also one of the first players in, I think it's both men and women's college basketball history, to take three different teams to the Elite Eight. Because she got there the year prior to joining LSU with Louisville.
Yeah. And I was also reading afterwards that she has been one of the top three, four players in women's college basketball from an NIL money standpoint.
Yeah, I think she's
been very popular.
$1 million this year.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to what Dan Quinn said about Brandon Coleman and others when we come back. Right, today was NFC Coaches Day down at the NFL League meetings at the Breakers in Palm Beach, Florida. Dan Quinn spoke. He was asked about, you know, Laremy Tunsil taking over at left tackle and what that meant for Brandon Coleman. Here's what he said. All right, good job by J.P. Finley, who was asking the question, to get him to be more specific. And he basically said, you know, yeah, it's down the line, but he's going to be the right tackle and he's going to be on the right side. That could ultimately be right guard because, remember, Sam Cosmi very likely won't be ready for the beginning of the season. But I think that's been the guess since the Tunsil trade, that it would be Brandon Coleman at right tackle. He's played both at TCU. We were just talking about Haley Van Lith in TCU. I was telling Denton during the break, one of my favorite places. My oldest son went there. Maryland, Penn State, TCU. I think the favorite for the parents was TCU. Now, I love Maryland. Don't get me wrong. Penn State was fine, too. Andrew Wiley moves inside, I guess, right? I mean, if Cosmi isn't ready to go, it's Coleman at right tackle, Wiley at right guard. Is that what you would surmise?
Yeah, so your whole offensive line would look Tunsil on the left side with Allegretti, Biotis in the middle, and then Wiley, Coleman.
And then when Cosmi comes back and is ready to go, Wiley, I guess they have more data on what Coleman is as a right tackle. And so they'll make the decision at that point. Okay. He also talked about just the defensive line and all of the, you know, the moves that were made. You know, not only Kinlaw, but Dietrich Wise and Eddie Goldman, et cetera. Here's what he said about the D-line. Onboarding. Onboard. It's such a corporate kind of term. You know, something he said there, you know what name popped into my head when he was talking about locker room? John Allen. John Allen has been really good for this organization through the worst of times, and then as the times started to improve last year. But I think maybe his time had run its course, and they were ready to move on to something else. Because John is smart, he's mature, and, you know, I'm going to guess that at times, maybe a bit, you know, demonstrative with some of the other players in the locker room. I because part of the change is John Allen leaving, right? Part of the change is John Allen leaving that he talked about.
Him and
I'm
going to
be interested too. Look, yeah. Bottom line is, big picture, you got to be better on defense next year. And maybe they'll be better on defense without significant, you know, additions, big name additions, just because it's year two in the same system, just because defense is variable year to year. Maybe, you know, an addition like Wise or Kinlaw will be a massive game changer. Maybe Jordan McGee ends up being a massive game changer. Maybe Marshawn Lattimore becomes exactly who they thought they were getting when they traded for him. You know, there are some, you know, pieces here that are new and are going to get, you know, opportunities that were, that are going to feel different than the opportunities they had last year. Lattimore being one of them. The opportunity being a healthy player. You know, maybe Will Harris is, you know, just as good and maybe more physical than Jeremy Chinn. We'll see. I mean, defense changes year to year. It's really hard to predict. But no matter what happens next year, the number one difference between last year's team and this year's team in 2025 has to ultimately be that the defense is a much better defense than it was in 2024. Because I think we're pretty confident that offensively they'll still be a good team. Maybe very good, as they were last year. All right, that's it for the day. Back tomorrow. Chris is next.